States to move towards taxation, taxing their citizens, which will require them to engage and build representatives. This is a diversionary war on the side of Aliyev that has been, domestic discontent has been enormous. And Aliyev has, the authoritarianism in Azerbaijan has been nourished by the oil, by the pipelines. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, Azerbaijan emerged as an independent country and started to control its oil resources. Unfortunately,
we have 5 seconds.
This authoritarianism, this militarism has not been challenged, and we see this playing out in Nagorno-Karabakh.
And we'll, of course, continue to follow this. Anna Ohanian, thanks so much for being with us, professor of political science and international relations at Stonehill College. Her books include Russia Abroad. That does it for our show. Stay safe, wear a mask, save lives. I mean.
Hi, I'm Marcia Hawker, your co-host with Nick Geffro for Jazz Lives. We alternate Wednesday afternoons from 6 minutes past noon to 2 o'clock, bringing you the full spectrum of jazz classics, new releases, and everything in between. Jazz is one of America's greatest contributions to the world, in large part because of its inclusiveness on a global level. And like jazz, KBOO Radio remains steadfast in its commitment to continue to serve our beloved community in this time of physical distancing. It does so by bringing you a wide variety of programming that reflects where we live and our issues and concerns. It also provides training in radio operations. KBOO educates, entertains, and enlightens. And that format is why I continue to support KBOO Community Radio. You can go to kboo.fm/give to support KBOO right now. And thank you so much.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
And it is 8:01. It's Friday. It's time. Mind that gap, because we are bridging it. Because girls are powerful. Stand by. Stay tuned to your community connection.
But in the studio, but far away, still visible, but at a distance, is the one and only Athea Billing.
Hi. Oh, goodness. I'm a little high there. We can see each other, which is a wild new development. very exciting to be here in the studio with you today doing the gap. We got Sonia in the studio. Hi, Sonia. Sonia's working some things out. This is very exciting because this is the first time that the gap has actually gotten to be in studio. we started this show after the good old quarantine started happening, and so we are here, socially distanced, different rooms, got a mask on. Rocking and rolling, and very, very excited to be here with you all today. Tammy, are you got some? Can we hear you? Your dulcet tones a little bit better now, perhaps.
My dulcet. Oh yeah. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. It's a treat to be here at the station. I was gonna say, fogging up my glasses here, trying to talk through these. Through these masks, but that's fine, you know. What's a little struggle every now and then. I wanted to say thank you so much for that lovely testimonial that we heard. I loved the jazz, the music, the jazz, the eclectic, the public affairs. KBOO just brings so much, and I'm you know, so glad that there is a tiny sense of normalcy being brought into my world, at least.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, the testimonial was lovely. You know, we are still in our fall membership.
We are, and there's another match. There's another match for this month as well. That's right. Every dollar that you donate today on KBOO.fm, a dollar will be matched. That's like, buy one, you get everything.
Yeah. Sort of a BOGO mentality, one could say. But yeah, doubling the impact of your donation. We do love to see that. And here at The Gap. Here at The Gap, we have a little thank you for folks who want to donate. If you mention us in the notes of your donation, Tammy and I will record you a fun little audio message.
Yes, that's true.
Of whatever type you might desire.
If it's saying, stop it, Uncle Frank, I'll do that. Or if it's even a little number, if it's like a happy birthday. I don't think we've ever said anything about happy birthday. Yeah.
If you want some... you know, maybe ill-fated attempts at sound effects. We could also try that. We're open. So, yeah, give us your suggestions. And support us and our wonderful radio station with your donations at kboo.fm and click on that donate button.
Thank you, Althea. And thank you, everyone. Thank you, Sonia. And today is going to be another two-part show. And we're going to start off we're going to be speaking with Richard, and he is on the line with us in just a moment. Richard is an activist and a community organizer in California, and we're going to be speaking with him about what's going on in Armenia right now, and I'm so glad that Democracy Now! Prefaced it so we can kind of keep going and get a really multi-layered analysis of what's going on and what's, you know, happening there, and also how people here are mobilizing to help the cause. So if we have Richard on the line, are you there?
I am here.
Richard, how are you? How are you this morning?
I'm doing as well as I can be.
On the line with us is Richard. Like I said, Richard, would you like to just kind of give a background about what you've been doing with the community, a little bit about yourself, and then what you've been doing with the community recently since the attacks.
Sure. So, my name is Richard Kazanjian, and obviously as an Armenian, this whole episode is really important to me and has been important to my community. I was effectively born into this struggle. There's been a lot of issues going on in that area for a number of years, but to frame it properly it would take a little bit more time. So let's just start here. I've been an activist and a community organizer in the Sacramento Valley area for more than 10 years now. I started actually doing some political work and then transitioned out of political work to doing more community-based work because it just seemed more, it resonated with me a lot more. So lately, I've been working with the community. We held a 400-person service at the church, where the local Armenian Apostolic Church, where we galvanized the community and gave them a whole lot of marching orders, essentially. You know, here's how you reach out to your representatives. Here's what you need to ask them. And we also gave them some tips on how to raise money and where that money should go and how to broadcast to people. Also, how to boycott, you know, how to not purchase any Turkish goods. So we gave them, you know, a pretty good comprehensive plan. And then just most recently, as of Monday this week, I helped organize a 1,000-person march to the Capitol in Sacramento, which was peaceful. We worked with local police department to make that safe, and just, you know, trying to galvanize the community and raise awareness and amplify specific messages.
That's fantastic. And, you know, considering the current climate, what was it like when you organized this march?
Well, you know, I have to tell you, obviously, given what has been happening in Portland and many other cities around, you know, the country, the you know, we had to work with law enforcement as properly as we could. Obviously, this cause, we don't have the same issues with law enforcement as maybe other communities do, but these issues do intersect. So let me diagram that out for you. Obviously, as a minority, I support any group of person or people, however you want to put it, that wants to emancipate themselves and to raise up their, you know, their profile in the community and be you know, on an even footing with everyone else. I think everyone deserves the right to self-determination and to have a high stature. And so, in looking at these other communities and some of the other issues that have gone on with law enforcement, obviously we don't have the same kind of friction, and the Armenian community largely has been under the radar for most law enforcement and for most people in this country. So when I approached law enforcement, I knew that there were problems in Sacramento, and I knew that there were social issues that many communities here are facing. But my MO with them was, you know, how do we work with you to make sure that our community has the maximum amount of safety, we have the maximum amount of freedom of expression, and if we work together as partners, we won't have any problems. And that's essentially what happened. We had over 1,000 people, including families. There were zero problems. The police, you know, we had committed to staying on the sidewalks, and once they saw the numbers swell beyond 500, they were, well, you can take the streets, we will block them off for you. And so I, as many people have had problems with the police departments all over the country, I have to say, I worked with them ahead of time and gave them our route and really let them know our intentions, and I gave them backstory and why we had grievances, and they seemed more than willing to work with us, and they actually executed on that properly. So we had no problems, and I was really grateful for that.
That's really great. And obviously, you know, you mentioned that you told them the backstory of what's happening now, you know, in the Armenian response to the attack from, you know, hostile countries. Can you give listeners a little bit of background and speak about, you know, a little bit about the history and then also what's happening right now?
Sure, I'd love to. And first of all, let me just say thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to have this discussion and to sort of clarify some of the things that are going on. I can't expect that most of the listeners have really, heard a lot about this or know a lot about this struggle. And even when you do go out and look in the world for different news stories, it's just a product of how fast the news needs to move, that things are framed specific ways. And sometimes the way the language is framed is due to expediency. And in that, they really truncate all of the nuance, and it begins to shape the listener or the reader's perception of the conflict, as they call it, even before they get to the actual content itself. So thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about this. When listeners see content out there about this, it's important to recognize this isn't just a conflict. This is an attack. Azerbaijan has attacked I'll give you a little timeline. The most recent timeline is that in July of this year, there was a sort of like an expeditionary force sent from Azerbaijan into mainland Armenia, and they've done that to provoke an attack. As a result of that, of Armenia defending itself, Azerbaijan has created a huge media campaign, and oh my gosh, look at what happened to us! They've attacked us, and what really happened is they sent forces into our borders. And what that did is that triggered Turkey to be able to stand up and to promote that it would stand by its partner. And so one would ask, well, okay, why is this happening in the first place? So before we get into the current, I have to give you a little bit of backstory. Obviously, in the Middle East and in the Indo-European areas, that, you know, territorial rights, quote unquote, have changed hands and been redefined for millennia. But Armenians have been in what is commonly called Anatolia for centuries. And in the specific area right now, Nagorno-Karabakh, or what we call Artsakh, Armenians have been the only indigenous inhabitants dating centuries before Christ. And the reason is because it's a very beautiful mountainous area, and no one has really bothered going in there. I mean, Alexander the Great went in, and the Romans and the Persians, and they largely left that area alone, because it's hard to get into. And so there are hundreds and hundreds of ancestral Armenian churches that were hand-built with stone, you know, dating back to the 3rd and 4th centuries. So, you know, there's a long history of Armenians being in this specific area. So I'll flash to World War I, where sort of the modern era of this begins. The Ottoman Empire is disintegrating, the Ottoman borders are shrinking, and the territories that were once controlled by the Ottomans are now up for grabs and up in the air. And of course, any ethnic issues may begin to perk up, and people start fighting against one another, especially when they have no leadership and they have no nothing to tamp anything down. Meanwhile, the Ottomans are concerned that the ethnic population of the Armenians who are Christian are going to rise up with the Russians who are coming down from Russia from the east. And so what the Turks do is they use the cover of World War I, when the world is distracted, sound familiar, to begin ethnically cleansing the Armenians. And so the reports are about 1.5 million Armenians were killed in this genocide. And genocide is not just killing the people; it's destroying the culture. It is the theft of property and the theft of the economic engine, which drives everything. So there's a sizable percentage of the current Turkish economic system that is actually built on the backs of Armenian labor. Like my grandparents, and my grandparents actually survived, and my father immigrated here, which puts me in the fortunate and privileged position of being in California and an American. So that gives me the opportunity to give back to my community, and that's what many of us are doing. So I want to reframe it a little bit. So what happened is, once the Soviet Union took over this entire area, what it did was it saw an enclave of Turkish cousins in this area and named this country Azerbaijan. Obviously, this is a sort of a kindergarten version of this whole thing because it's very nuanced, so I'm trying to get it as quickly as possible. And what they did is they took this area of Karabakh, or Nagorno-Karabakh, or Artsakh, and they gave this area. They were going to give it to the Armenians, as it should have been, because it was one of the provinces. Think of it like a county, yeah? But instead, in the last minute, literally in about the 11th hour, they gave it to the newly created Republic of Azerbaijan as a nod to the Turks, because they were hoping that the Turks would become communists, because then that would make a larger communist bloc. And, of course, the Turks were kind of playing both sides, as they typically do. Even right now, they are trying to be, lead the Muslim world and still play with the EU. And so what happened was, is all these countries went into sort of a cultural deep freeze. And once they emerged from that in the late 80s, early 90s, when all these republics began to break away, which is what you're going to hear, it's a breakaway republic. So even now, we're still using 1990s terminology for current situation. And this will bring this all to a head in just a moment. So we have this area called Artsakh or Nagorno-Karabakh, and it declared its independence in 1991. And Azerbaijan didn't like that, so they ended up fighting a war with one another. And in doing that, in the next 3 years, Artsakh won its independence. And
hello there, you, Richard, you cut off, you there?
I am. I don't know what happened. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry.
About that.
Go ahead. Yep.
So that's okay. So since 1994, this area has been taking care of itself. It's been autonomous. In fact, mainland Armenia hasn't even had the opportunity to recognize it as its own country, because if you just look at the map, if you look at where Armenia is and you look at Artsakh to the east, what you'll see is a small landlocked country that is surrounded by enormous enemies. You've got Turkey to the west, you've got Georgia, who is ambivalent at best to the north. You've got Azerbaijan, who is essentially the second coming of Turkey. Matter of fact, Turkey and Azerbaijan have a two countries, one nation policy. So they literally view themselves as the same people. And they're to the east, and then of course you have Iran to the south. And if Iran is our closest ally, and they're a deeply fundamentalist Muslim country supporting the world's oldest Christian country, that's a very unique position to be in. So then the question becomes, well, how come Russia isn't stepping in? Well, they've been complicit at best, because in many ways what they're doing is they're letting us, when I say us, I mean the Armenians, dry out in the wind a little bit, because Armenia is the only democracy in the area. So what we have is a Christian democracy, the oldest Christian nation on earth, that is surrounded by predominantly Muslim or questionably politically aligned areas. And because Armenia has cozied up to the West, the Russians have not been really forthright in stepping in. So we're really in a dire situation, and we're really doing, the boys on the ground are doing everything they can to try and prevent an onslaught, and that's essentially what it would be. So, we are trying to raise awareness and get people focused on it. We're trying to get people, the average American citizen has the ability to call their congressman to put pressure and to support some of the bills that are going through that have been brought up by Adam Schiff and Jackie Speier and Abin Nazarian and many other people. So we're really trying to get pressure on the American government to step in.
Thank you for that, Richard. That was a very in-depth analysis and kind of his historical background. I know it, you kind of had to rush through it. Really appreciate that. Althea, do you have any questions you'd like to ask, or...
Yeah. Hi, Richard. I have a quick question. What kind of support, you mentioned what maybe the average person could be able to do, what kind of support does the U.S. offer in this area, and what could it be doing differently?
That's a good question. So the U.S. has had some financial support to Armenia and to even the Nagorno-Karabakh, but the aid that they've been giving Artsakh has been in the form of just some humanitarian aid here and there. But there's official, and the reason they can't do anything more is because they don't recognize it as an official nation. And there's political ramifications for all of this. So what, and the U.S. has a sizable military budget with Turkey, because they are a NATO ally. Currently, they are a NATO ally. They also support Azerbaijan. So there are a few things that we can do. Besides putting pressure politically, what we need to do, the kind of pressure we need to put politically, is to say we need immediate sanctions on Turkey and Azerbaijan. So immediately stop the flow of American money to these countries. because they are engaging in war practices. And the money that we give them through our taxes is literally funding the death and destruction of other people. And that's unacceptable. The other thing that we can do without even putting pressure on any of these other nations is to do a personal boycott. That means look at all the labels of every product that you buy. That means look at the labels of, you have to look at what brands of gasoline that you're buying, because you have to understand Azerbaijan, it makes most of its money through oil sales. And that's another component that is really worth bringing up for 10 seconds here, that Azerbaijan's entire infrastructure, its entire economic engine has been disrupted by the COVID crisis. So what's happened is as their economy is collapsing, they have this political desire to shift blame and shift the focus. And it just so happens that they're focusing it on Armenia, because what a better way to rile up your base and to focus energy on other people rather than your own problems, but to go up against an old foe and stir up old hatreds and things that, you know, are unnecessary. I mean, like I said earlier, all you have to do is look at the map and you'll see that there's no reason for Armenia to want to start a war or start a fight. So this is a case where we have a couple of countries who have decided to start a war while the world is doing other things. So we can stop them by putting political pressure, taking responsibility for our own actions by not supporting these countries, and also telling our elected officials to pull all funding and to even question Turkey's status as a NATO country. I don't think they're the kind of representatives that we need. The need for them to rein in the Soviet Union has been over for 30 years. So why are we giving them, unbridled opportunities to go wreak havoc in these areas? Why? And the other question I would ask is, why are we beholden to territorial boundaries that were set by Joseph Stalin in the 1920s? When people say, well, Nagorno-Karabakh or Artsakh is actually part of Azerbaijan, let's remember that Azerbaijan as a country only began in the early 20s. And so how did that play out? That was a gift given to the Turks and the Azeris in order to court them for political reasons. So we're going to be beholden to Joseph Stalin for creating an artificial boundary when Armenians, 95% plus, have lived there for millennia. I think that's worth looking at.
Thank you, Richard. You bring out a lot of good points. I just wanted to remind listeners that you are listening to KBOO Portland. This is The Gap. I'm Tammy. On the line with us is Richard Kazanjian. Just want to make sure I'm saying that right.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you. I appreciate it. As a person with a non-American last name, I get the butchering. So I'm sorry if I ever do that. Althea,
no,
thank you for that great question. Considering what's going on in the world and the intense shift that, I say a societal shift, towards amplifying social justice, it's really important that, we discuss these things and also that we hold our representatives accountable, because they care about what we care about. You see how it works, right? I wanted to ask if you have any kind of information that you could talk about as to what is going on the ground as far as the Armenian response. I don't know if it's, I know that, in the beginning of the interview, you mentioned that misinformation is a kind of a key element in, there's a whole campaign that the bigger actors are bringing into this. So when people are saying, it's a conflict or it's a war, it's kind of making it seem as though it's even on both sides. So I wanted to just get your take on, if you can, and what's going on the ground, and if it is indeed, as people saying, an actual ethnic cleansing, and then how that ties into, like you said, the actual financial and economic downfall that these countries are facing because of COVID.
Sure. Sure. Okay. So there's a lot to unpack, and again, I have to be sensitive to time for both of us. I mean, I could go all day, but I just, I want to be sensitive to everybody's time on this, and also, the listeners have a threshold at which they can't listen anymore. So to unpack that, let's start here. There are a few different venues we should talk about. What's happening on the ground in terms of the theater of war is, Armenia and Artsakh are holding back as much as they can, and the reason is because they know what's at stake. There's a phrase that's been floating around that if Azerbaijan puts down its weapons, there will be no more war. But if Armenia puts down its weapons, there will be no more Armenia. And every Armenian that I know absolutely knows that directly to their core. Because when we talk about genocide, it's not hyperbole. The word was literally coined because of what happened to the Armenians. And then when Raphael Lemkin, the Jewish lawyer that actually coined the term, saw that being replicated in Germany and with the Holocaust, he saw a pattern emerging. And this is the most important part. I think if no one takes anything away from this entire segment, it should be this. Because we have not held Turkey accountable for over 100 years, it has propagated the idea that if you are a strong man, you can perpetrate this on other people. We saw it with Cambodia. We saw it with Rwanda. We saw it with Sudan. We've seen it in many other areas. We're seeing it with the Rohingya. So the point is that if the international community does not get together and actually hold these people accountable, they feel emboldened to do more because they can move the line wherever they want. And you can't unkill people, right? Once you do something, it's simply a matter of, well, it's already done. What are you going to do now? And there's plenty of information out there to support what I'm saying. The other area to focus on is that there is a digital campaign that's happening besides the theater of war on the ground. You've got Turkish and Azeri state-sponsored teams of people who are creating bots, and they are flooding the market, so to speak, with disinformation. Matter of fact, recently all you have to do is look up Cardi B. I mean, you can say whatever you want about her or Kim Kardashian or anybody else, but they do carry some weight, at least in the popular sphere, whatever. She recently put a pro-Armenian statement out because her real estate agent is Armenian. Mm. And she got besieged with people who began attacking her digitally and trying to affect her income stream. And so she literally had to retract her statement. So what these people are doing are working against the Armenian community from a digital perspective as well, and this is well coordinated. And then they're inspiring the average citizen, so to speak, to do the same. So they're really sophisticated in their efforts. But from the diaspora, what we're doing is we are mobilizing, and we recognize that we may not have the same kind of economic power that the Azeris have because of oil. We may not have the same economic power because of Turkey and its alliances with Europe and its alliances with NATO, and many Europeans still go to Turkey to vacation or for the spring or whatever. But what we do have is a righteous cause, and I don't say that in a religious term. I mean that it's important for everybody to recognize their right to self-determination, whether it is Artsakh or whether it's Armenians. We have a right to live. Every community has a right to exist and to grow and as long as you don't hurt anyone else. And I think that's really what we're trying to get across, is that we need to promote that, because that is a very deeply American value too. And I would also say, we're vastly outnumbered. The Armenians don't have the same kind of economic engine that could facilitate the continual purchase of weapons and people. The disparity between the size of these nations is enormous. We're talking about a nation that is smaller than Rhode Island and with a population that is the size of Los Angeles, and it's being attacked by countries the size of Texas and California and many others like combined. So there's no reason for us to start a war. So what we need to do is recognize that there are people there who are protecting their homes, and they are fiercely going to defend them. And again, that's an American value. America wouldn't exist if it wasn't for shoeless farm boys who were underfunded, who fought against the world's best army in Britain. And so I have a lot of faith in them, but we need to support them. And so that's why we're asking for people to donate to things like ArmeniaFund.org, because that will streamline the resources to get directly to the people that need them as fast as possible. And the other thing I'd like to say is this. America has a history of altruism. And I'm not saying that to beg for money. I'm saying that because we'd like to promote that. America has this longstanding tradition of being altruistic, and we want to help people. We want to, feed the hungry and clothe the. We have been doing this for a long time. And where did that start? That started with the Near East Foundation. And the Near East Foundation was created to take care of Armenians who've been displaced by genocide. So this is coming full circle. Armenians have been the subject of ethnic cleansing since it began. And America has been there to help. And America's main point of pride about being altruistic started with this. And so I think if I were to leave anyone with anything, it's that we are either going to be trying to prevent a tragedy, or we're going to be reading about it and wishing we had done something about it later. And I would rather us do something about it before it happens. So when we talk about genocide and is this happening, absolutely, it is the edges of this are happening right now. And every Armenian I know is at DEFCON 1. I haven't gotten more than 4 hours sleep a night for the past 2 weeks, just because I'm trying to help coordinate my community and mitigate as much pain as possible. And activate people before it's too late.
Well, Richard, we really, really appreciate you, taking the time to speak with us. And all of this information that we talked about is all going to be posted on KBOO.FM on the GAPS webpage. So if listeners are interested in, some links that Richard provided us with and some more information, it'll be available online. Richard, again, thank you so much. Are there any final items you'd like to mention right before we wrap up?
Well, first of all, again, thank you for having me. Thank you for giving me a few minutes to talk about it. There's a lot to cover in a pretty short amount of time, all things considered. There's plenty of information out there, and I know it can be difficult to sift through. I've tried to do what I can to collate some decent links. The information is moving relatively fast. I would say this. I'm a big fan of the quote that if it can be destroyed by the truth, then it deserves to be destroyed by the truth. And so I think that every listener has an opportunity, and I would even say an obligation, to go look for what that truth is. And I think if you do, you'll see that the Armenians have consistently been on the right side of history. And we're doing the best we can to survive and also thrive. And we need your help, because we are just as much an American story as anyone else. And so we need your help, and we need it now. And so please do the research, do the reading, and I'm happy to help in any way I can. So thanks for having me here today, and it means a lot to myself and the community.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Thank you, Richard Kazanjian. I think I said that right. We really appreciate you again. All this information will be on the website, on the GAPS webpage. And we're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back in just about a couple of moments. So take care, and yeah.
ništa bre leng, aj soberu. Kahelu hanze, aj stašteru.
This is KBOO Portland. You're listening to The Gap with your hosts, Tammy and Althea. Hello, Althea.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm well, thank you. That was the soothing melodies of Surge from System of a Down, if it sounds familiar. Also Armenian-American with Arts Talk, so such a beautiful melody. And I don't understand the words, but solidarity, it ripples through.
You don't have to understand the words necessarily.
Yeah. So still we are in the midst of our membership drive here in KBOO, and we all try our very best to bring you timely information, interesting music, diverse voices, and the truth, you know, stuff that, you know, like Richard say, isn't really necessarily going to be out there, and try to give you the voices of communities that really need to be amplified. And, you know, we can only do that with your support. You can go to kboo.fm to help out the radio station and become a member. So Althea, you got anything to say?
I was gonna mention the match. We do have a match this month.
That's right.
And you know, we always say that every dollar counts, but this month every dollar counts double. And there are, you know, running a radio station is expensive, and so all of your support goes to all kinds of things. And really, even though we've been, you know, pushing through the COVID pandemic, it's been an opportunity for us at the radio station to start developing new things. And so there's a lot of different avenues for people creating radio at their home, for example, that your dollars help us do and help, you know, share all of our know-how and talents with everyone in Portland and around the world. So yeah, kboo.fm, you can click on that good old donate button. It takes you to a web form. Woohoo, a web form! Here at The Gap, we have a little thank you gift opportunity. If you mention us in your notes, Tammy or I would be more than happy to record some kind of voice message for you. I think we've said before, like outgoing voicemail, a lecture to a family relative,
mm-hmm. That one's my favorite. Yeah. I want to lecture someone.
I don't know that I feel like really confident about my singing voice, but if you, if that's not a problem for you, we can work something out just to let you know from us at The Gap how much we appreciate you sticking with us, sticking by us, and helping out the station.
That's true. KBOO.FM. So on to part two of today's program. We have about, what is it? Oh, there's 16 minutes left. Good for us.
16 minutes, yeah.
Good for us.
You know, this part of the show is going to be a little more loose.
A little, yes. And we, again, thank you, Richard, so much for all of that information and all the previous information that we talked about alongside with links will be available on KBOO.FM under the Gap's webpage, and that'll be after the program. So if you're interested in that, you know, it'll be available
then.
Search
us up.
Yeah.
Find our episode page. We'll be there.
So today is Friday, and this week we did experience a part two in the extravaganza of the magnificent and very cerebral and exciting, titillating. Ooh. You like?
Yeah. I don't even know where you're going with this. This could be anything. There's been a lot happening. I don't actually know what this is about to be, so let's hear it.
It's a debate.
Oh, the debate. Sure, yeah. Sure.
It felt a lot more like a debate as opposed to like two angry dudes yelling at each other.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I was like in Ocean City or something watching that. Like, chill out. You're sunburnt. You haven't eaten anything and you've been drinking. Stop it.
Now is not the time to pick fight.
Yeah.
You need a nap.
But yeah, it was an interesting debate. It was nice to actually hear what people had, like what their platforms were going to, you know, I actually felt like it was a little bit more educational. I heard a little bit more about the platforms, a little bit more talking points. Some more answers to questions that weren't asked.
Yeah.
I like that. Very political.
Circling a point. I don't know if it's the point or the question, but there were more cogent positions, I suppose, brought up. Again, I come back to like what the status of the moderator was and just echoing in my ears of Susan saying, thank you, Mr. Vice President, thank you. And then Kamala comes and she's like, actually, I'd like to respond to that. I think I deserve to respond to that. And Susan's like, okay.
Why don't they just give them gavels and get it over with?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that this year has sort of illuminated, for me at least, another level of, like, the politicking of creating a debate, because they do let, you know, media people, like, organize them, but they're not necessarily debate people. They don't necessarily know how to run this kind of thing. And then there's this whole, like, status thing of if I yell at the vice president to please...
I'd be scared to get parking tickets for the rest of my life.
Yeah, please put a sock in it. It's like, oh, no, now you're not going to... Now they don't pick up calls from USA Today.
Because right.
That's the kind of retribution type stuff. So I was trying to, like, think of in my mind, it's like, who could moderate this debate that would be... that could, like... you know, put somebody on mute. It's like, that's enough, actually.
Speaking of, see, I'm a sound engineer. I know how these things work. You know, there's somebody controlling those microphones, and that person can just cut somebody's mic anytime they want. And that person has a boss who can tell them, cut that mic, because that person is breaking the rules. So, Althea, you were saying?
Oh, man.
Okay, we've just found the next person is going to be
hoisted by my gavel. Yeah, hoisted by my own petard. Here comes Sonia. That's enough.
Who do we call about this to make this happen? I'm wielding it into the universe.
Yeah, we're. I mean, I don't want to speak on Sonia's behalf, but if you're out there looking for a moderator, Sonia has the know-how, the grit, you know.
Yeah.
And just the understanding of the role.
Yeah. Mm. And muted me real good. Just cut me right off.
I thought it was technical difficulties. I don't know what happened. I thought you slipped off your chair.
Intentional technical difficulties. We haven't talked about that.
And then I did a watch party again because in the tune of, you know, how we talked, and it really resonated with me with being neighborly.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing the watch parties and it's been super fun because it's like, it's all my, you know, friends, and they're all like just different people, you know, not like me or like people that are necessarily like very newsy. So they're just like, to get their takes is just really funny. And a lot of times it's like, I feel like sometimes when you're really in it, you don't see things from the outside. So to get a different perspective, like, yeah, like that. There was, I mean, some of the stuff in the background was just like very confusing, like the eagle on a on an American flag surfboard. I don't know if you noticed that, but it's just, it was just there the whole time. I don't understand the aesthetics of that. But also, you know, like just general, you know, ideas. But watching it, it felt a lot more like a presidential debate. Mm-hmm. And considering that neither one of them wanted to answer about the either's medical records, it made me wonder if we were watching the actual presidential debate. You
yeah.
know? There's definitely more, I think, more pressure on them, I think, than maybe previous.
Yeah, because usually, like, you know, as far as, like, political scientists and, like, people who, like, want to predict things, the vice presidential debate is rarely of consequence.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, it was sort of like, you know, people were like, oh, we can still do this. That's cool.
It was like the grown-ups taking over.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like...
And given the likelihood that whichever, you know, senile old... warmongering, war criminal, pedophile wins, the people who are speaking last night or the night before or whatever are the ones who are going to be actually doing things before long.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And neither one of them answered about each other's when they were asked about medical records, which I and it goes to show you, they coordinated that. If they really want to, both sides can definitely work together. Mm. They're like, you're not going to mention that. You're not going to mention that, right? And it just went on ahead. By the way, in case you didn't know, this is a call-in show. So if you'd like to call in for the remainder 10 minutes of the program, you can at 503-231-8187. And we, you know, just getting back on highlighting the debate. There's to be a fly on the wall in that debate.
It's good, you know? The animal kingdom is involved this year, and how often do we get to see that? You know, it was like the bird that landed on Bernie's podium. That was kind of the last one. I saw some tweet about that the White House press corps is getting attacked by raccoons on the lawn. What? I don't know.
It's DC. I don't doubt it.
It's, there's I don't raccoons doubt it. That are after them, man. I don't. The you know, Animal Kingdom's like, okay, you guys, you tried, but it's not gonna do it. And yeah, the fly was like, you know, when have you ever seen a fly sit somewhere for so long? But I brought us a little TikTok today of somebody. This is by TikTok user Jay Firstman pretending to be the fly's publicist. Can we get that going real quick?
Hi, it's Jenny. What the heck just happened? We're obsessed. We're all freaking out over here. I'm freaking out. No, you're an icon. You're an American treasure. No, I'm shaking in my boots. girl, America just watched you and loved you. Even the Republicans are like laughing. Yeah, no, I saw it on Twitter. Don't go on Twitter. Okay. How did you think of the idea? Just I wasn't aware you were doing that. Oh, you did it with your agents? Okay, I just need to be kept in the loop with these things. It's important. But that's besides the point. I think the first thing we need to do is kind of get it into the narrative that you are female. No one is talking about the fact that you are a strong female fly boss girl in charge, and people need to know. And then I think it's acting. No, people are saying you're the next Jennifer Lawrence. No, they are. There's Oscar buzz. Nadine, write that down. Oscar buzz. Emphasis on the buzz, Nadine. Anyway, go do your thing. I don't want to hold you up. Go eat some garbage, girl. We love you. We love you. We love you, fly.
Oh my goodness, that was
The Fly's Publicist by TikTok user Jay Firstman. Anyway, thought that was kind of funny. We have a caller, Robbie.
How's it going, Robbie?
What's up?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk about that debate. That was I saw the bird land on Bernie Sanders' podium. It's crazy. I still kind of cry about it when I think about it. Because, that was nature. I felt like a lot of, that was really important.
It was in Portland, too.
Yeah, that was a really pretty incredible moment, honestly. And it's a shame that we're where we are now, which is like, which brought up the debate. It was like the debate was a lot more with Pence and Kamala Harris. It was a lot more like normal debates, I guess, right? Where politicians just kind of normally lie. Because hearing Kamala Harris talk about the housing crisis that she took on in 2008 was like just a total lie. And although we all know, you know, the Republicans lie, I think the Democrats are just kind of better liars. And it was like still pretty hard to watch because all I hear is a lot of talk and not a lot of, you know, the action that, you know, actually would happen if they, you know, said what they meant. You know, to quote Baldwin, you know, I don't believe what you say because I see what you do. And it's just a shame that we're in this position now, because I really don't feel like any of the candidates represent what I've been fighting for.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, oh, yeah. And you know, so much of like the debate talk, I feel like just having to do news all the time, like I have the secret code of like, oh, I understand what that was a reference to. Ooh, hoo, hoo, that came up 3 weeks ago in my research. But I wonder how much, you know, somebody who doesn't pay that much attention to the news, how much do you really get out of that from a policy perspective versus just how do people carry themselves? How do they speak? How do they treat each other? And did a fly land on their head?
Well, and that's actually kind of another thing. Like, I think these debates are kind of pointless. I've seen debates before that are, I don't know, valuable to campaigns, I guess, right? But everybody's already made up their mind. This election is a pretty different election. I've been hyper aware of news since like the Al Gore, George Bush thing. And just watching the evolution of American politics, it's like people already know who they're going to vote for. This election is pretty different in that realm. And so it's like the debates aren't really doing anything outside of like a WWE kind of match where it's like people on the left and people on the right are like, you know, supporting their side. It's like a football game or, you know, a sports game.
Yeah, it becomes a sport.
It's like regionals, like the political regionals, you know? Who's gonna
are we gonna make it to sectionals? I don't know.
Jeez.
Yeah, and it's like, although, you know, I really wish that, you know, Donald Trump wasn't in office, like I think that there's stuff that we have to be cognizant of which got him there in the first place, which is this system, which is the fact that Bill Clinton called him up and told him to run in 2015. Which a lot of people don't talk about, but, you know, literally Bill Clinton called Donald Trump, told him to run in the year 2015 when they were still good friends. And I was like, I'm showing this to my friend, this video clip of Donald Trump almost endorsing Hillary Clinton to run in 2016, in the year 2011. And all this stuff, like Donald Trump being a Democrat up until the year 2009, it just seems so fabricated to me that it's hard for me to believe that what is being sold to the left and right football or to the sports teams of this, right? Because all I see is like the facts getting tossed out and emotions running high, and nobody's able to kind of look at the whole picture and be like, wait a minute, you know, how is it that, you know, Donald Trump flipped his stance completely? And this is fun to bring up to Trump supporters. It's like Donald Trump was pro-abortion and for, you know, universal health care. You know, how does somebody change their mind completely in 6 years, you know, seven years, when he changed from a Democrat to Republican? It blows my mind that we forget about it because we get caught up in this, you know, sports, you know, this spectacle, and people are going full-fledged into it because of, you know, I just view Donald Trump as a television actor playing a role, but that's probably because I'm pretty crazy. I'm pretty out there. I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine that somebody would flip their stance that much and go full head into it, and then so much into it that we can't even, you know, it's like, well, he just represents the right now.
Right.
Even though, yeah, you know, 10, 15 years ago, he was the total opposite.
Right. Those kinds of, you know, hypocrisies when it serves your side are maybe not as pressing. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Robbie. We appreciate you giving us your take. I had a quasi joke because you mentioned that he was for universal healthcare. I was going to say, well, he is now. He loves the government-funded healthcare after he's coming out of COVID. And, you know, on this show, we always talk about the TikTok angle. You know, CNN and Fox News are now sourcing Kellyanne Conway's daughter, Claudia Conway, who, you know, she
was the secret source.
Yeah, yeah, posting on TikTok that, you know, she's not that he's not good. And her, I believe, and this is alleged, her mom made her post a statement to TikTok that said that she just made all of that up and that her mom didn't lie to her and give her COVID. And so she said that. And then, but the song that she played underneath
nice.
It is another woman saying that she calls, you know, whatever, that is maybe not true. So
interesting.
Claudia Conway, I know you get a lot of media attention. We're fans of you on this show. You ever want to come on The Gap, you're invited.
Who would have thunk it? 2020. TikTok, I guess personalities are considered unnamed sources. Yeah, I just suggest to her mom, just walk out the room when you're taking phone calls, right, man. Just walk out the room. Like, anywho's, thank you all so much for listening. We have, our time is UP up.
Yep.
It's been a pleasure to be here in the studio, afar, but still in the same region. Thank you all so much, listeners, Althea, Sonia. Thank you again, Richard. Excuse me, for getting on the program and talking with us about the Armenian response to the violent attacks that are happening right now on the ground. And like I mentioned, in just about a little bit, we'll have some more information and links about that for listeners that are interested. Althea, any final words before we part for the weekend?
I just want to say thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Sonia, for taking care of us, for muting me when I deserve it. And we will be back next week. Thanks
See
so much
you.
For listening.
Bye.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy